Hello and welcome to Classique 15, our coffee break podcast with me, Jack Pepper, where we sit down with a star of the classical music world to hear their advice on how to break into and how to make a living from classical music. Our guest today is one of the flute's most respected names. Emmanuel Pahud has appeared as a soloist alongside the London Symphony Orchestra and Bavarian Radio Symphony Orchestra. He's played at Carnegie Hall and has collaborated with everyone from Simon Rattle to Daniel Barenboim. His repertoire is broad, having premiered music by Elliot Carter and adventured into the world of jazz, performing big band music and recording jazz arrangements of classical favourites. Well, it all began in the Berlin Philharmonic Orchestra, where Emmanuel followed in the footsteps of James Galway as their principal flautist. Well, when we spoke on a video call, I started by asking Emmanuel to take us back to the day he auditioned.
Oh, well, Jack, it's a long time ago now. We have to go back to October of 1992. So that was last millennium. And the world has changed quite a lot since then. But there was this position opening at Berlin Philharmonic. And of course, it's been held in the past by some of my mentors, great players such as James Galway in the 1970s, and also one of my teachers, Aurel Nicolet, in the 50s. So that was always a position, despite Berlin Philharmonic being a German orchestra in many ways, that had a tradition of having an international flautist. And this is why it was an obvious thing to do for students my generation, or young professionals my generation. I was 22, 23 by that time. And it was, I got lucky to be invited because I had some previous orchestra experience also. And, you know, for Berlin, you play for the entire orchestra and you're chosen by them. So you have to convince rather like in a concert situation, more than prepared audition situation. You are playing in the first round. There's about 20 competitors that are invited to that first round. You're playing in front of the orchestra. First movement and cadenza of the Mozart flute concerto of your choice, and then a second movement again, and it was fantastic. I didn't know who was going to be the piano player, so I was a little bit worried, and then I saw it's Philip Moll doing the piano accompaniment in that audition. It was of course an excellent surprise, and it felt really great making music with such a musician. So that's how it all starts on a day like that. And after a good one hour and a half, they've gone through all the competitors for the first round, and the orchestra starts discussing and who they're going to listen to in a second round with either a piece of the choice of the candidates or some orchestral excerpts already. And I had, because I didn't know that Philip Moll was going to accompany the audition, I had prepared a solo piece, and that was Berio Sequenza. And I was probably the first player to enter the orchestra choosing a piece from the 20th century, from the solo repertoire that was post-war, basically. And that was a little bit kind of playing poker, you know. if when you go away from the standard repertoire, you put yourself off the competition, and that can be either positive or negative. But people notice that something's going on, and therefore you get their attention. And I think this is something that's always pays off in the end. Just make yourself remarkable, but only in positive ways. That would be my strongest advice, I guess, for such an audition. Nowadays, we still do things like that, but we do a pre-selection by video so we can screen our candidates with their video tapes of Mozart concerto and a piece of their choice. And decide upon the basis of these videos who we're going to invite to perform in front of the orchestra.
So what would you say is the most important thing to keep in mind with a videotaped audition? You mentioned sort of two types of auditioning here, in person and then the sort of the first stage, the virtual audition. What would you say is the most important thing to keep in mind with a virtual one? What's the difference?
Well, the videotaping is actually a good opportunity for people to perform for us rather than being selected just based on their biography or recommendation letter. So it gives them one more opportunity to show their talent, their abilities on the instrument, and how musical, expressive, and how convincing the whole performance is. And you can really see whether somebody is breathing properly before they start playing. You can really see how the posture is working. If there's some tension here or there, you can really while listening to the performance and seeing at the same time that person playing, you can identify a few things that I would also do for an online masterclass, for example, and do a quick diagnosis, basically to see if that people is free from strain and from tension or tense muscles, or if it's somebody who's struggling against something, because that could give us an indication, okay, the sound is going to be different anyway in a live situation than with a close-up microphone. That's obvious. But the projection is really something that you cannot determine with the online applications. And that's the big question mark that we have. We can just really make a fair selection of who is really mastering in the instrument, who really is in command, who really is very well balanced in their technical preparation and control of the instrument. But we cannot tell so much who phrases, who uses a lot of dynamic, because these kind of things have a tendency to disappear a little bit, or to be not, because it's all taped in a different way, you know, for each candidate. Then it's really hard to compare these kind of things.
You were 22 when you joined the Berlin Philharmonic, their youngest player. How would you describe the dynamic with the wider ensemble? Would you say your youth was an advantage, or did it create challenges?
Well, when I started in Berlin, yes, I was 22 on the audition day and 23 by the time I actually started in the orchestra. But I already had 3 years of orchestral experience, having had my first job in Basel Radio Symphony Orchestra at age 19. I have started to play the flute very early, and I kept these 3-4 years advance later on also. And so I entered professional life a bit earlier, yet being quite experienced for my young age. I guess things now have changed a little bit. If I did the same studies as I have been doing back then, I would have to study for another 2 more years until I get my diploma. And then the possibility that we have nowadays with the academies for one or the orchestra to select some new members for them to be trained to possibly audition whenever such a position opens in the orchestra. All these kind of programs didn't exist back in the years. So you had to make your own experience just by making yourself available here or there last minute and show up, basically. And it was a very different world, of course, the way you documented all these things and how you made connections. It was more about going to the concert, meeting the people and discussing with them and getting lessons from them. I guess this today, with all the internet and all the information that one can have, it's really something that you can analyze. If you want to apply for Berlin Philharmonic for a job like this, it would not be a bad thing to have a look at how the orchestra plays on the digital concert hall, for example, or just through the YouTube channel, and to see a bit what makes it different, say, from another orchestra, from any other orchestra in Europe, like Amsterdam, London, or Vienna, for example, or then from American orchestras, where the mentality and the spirit of playing together is not exactly seen in the same manner, in the same way. So this is something that I would recommend people who are applying to jobs in orchestras, is to check, first of all, what is it about? What does make this position so special? And this is something that in my generation, you could only gain through going to the concert.
Do you remember any advice that you were given when you started out at the Berlin Philharmonic? If you were sort of 22, 23 years old, do you remember anything that was said to you at the time? Good advice?
Well, luckily, when I started in Berlin, Claudio Abbado had just been elected to the new chief conductor of the orchestra and music director. And Abbado was famous in my generation and the previous generation and the next generation for the youth orchestras that he's been creating, and for the opportunities that he's been giving to young musicians to play together. And he, by that time, he had created 2 of them, and he did create another 2 orchestras until he eventually left us a decade ago. Now, Claudio Abbado was very eager to integrate the young players in the orchestra. It was actually the mission of his tenure with the orchestra, because more than half of the orchestra was renewed. The entire post-war generation went to retire. And therefore, within a few years, it was only half of the Carian Orchestra left. And it was really Abbado's merits and Abbado's charge also to incorporate these musicians. And of course, I've been told, recommended things by my colleagues, by my teachers, mentors who had also been playing in that orchestra. And one of them had been playing under Furtwängler. The other one, James Galway, had been playing under Karajan. And they told me things about playing in this orchestra that still are true today after decades of Abbado, of Simon Rattle, and now under Kirill Petrenko. There's something physical about the sound making in this orchestra, the impact that music is doing to you on stage, how it's modeling also physically the movement, the phrasing in the orchestra. Sometimes it's an incredible emotional tsunami that's going on stage, and the entire hall is just vibrating and going surfing on that wave. It's really something physical that is quite unique to be experienced in this orchestra.
Well, I should say, Emmanuel, that you also pursued a highly successful solo career in addition to playing in top orchestras. How difficult is it to balance being a soloist and an orchestral player? Do they work together, or do they work against one another?
Well, I was lucky not to have to choose. I was also prize winner of competitions when I also started playing in an orchestra. So therefore, since I left the Paris Conservatory at age 20, I have been immersed in both solo, recital, concerto, chamber music, orchestra playing, modern music, baroque playing, and I keep on doing all that stuff nowadays. At age 50 plus, it's a bit more challenging to keep up with the rhythm like that. But on the other hand, I have a lot more experience and know how to drive things probably much better and much faster than I used to when I was 20, and maybe going a little bit in every direction. No, fortunately, unlike my famous predecessors here in Berlin, Nicolet in the 50s and Galway in the 70s, the city was not separated from the world anymore. Therefore, travel was made possible, and the planning of the orchestra was not made by the conductor, but by the orchestra itself in the meantime. So it changed to a self-run model, basically, of running democratically an orchestra. Therefore, we guarantee with my other colleagues playing the flute here in the orchestra that one of us is going to play the week for each program. And this is something that was not possible as such in the previous decade. So this has allowed me, of course, to go on making both, getting the best of both worlds. And I started a recording contract back in the 90s, first with Ovidis Valois in France, and then later on with EMI Classics after three CDs, I think. And that was the mid-90s. And since then, this has been taken over now by Warner Classics. But we have over 35, 40 CDs that have been published under this label now. And we still have a lot more projects going on. So this is something that for me is my musical world, without boundaries, without limitations. I would say I try to play everything I like to play on the flute.
You mentioned the challenge of rhythm was the word that you used, and sort of the danger when you were starting out of going in every direction. How real is the risk of burnout? How do you learn to say no as well as yes?
Yes, well, it's very easy, basically. When you get a request, somebody wants to hire you for a concert. First of all, you're very happy, of course, to be asked for. But you have to think, okay, if they ask me, it's because it's good for them. It's good for their business, or it's good for their programming, whatever. Is it good for me? What can I learn from that situation? Can I do maybe something in that project that is going to bring me one step further? And to try to always look forward to what could come next, to anticipate what could possibly come next, like one step after the other, but always thinking, okay, this, in which direction are we going, so that the whole thing keeps a sort kind of a biologically a kind of constructive process, you know, moving forward rather than going in all directions after one another. I think it's good to streamline a little bit the activity and to focus maybe on one type of project, and then after a few days of that one, just shift and move on to the next project, but not do everything at the same time. And this is maybe one of the dangers that is there for a lot of young players today, is to take so many opportunities because they're there, but some of them are just making it more confusing in the end. And they're maybe not bringing you any further, but rather keeping you a little bit further back.
So what would be the best piece of advice that you would give a young or emerging artist today? The most important thing that they should keep in mind in the coming days and weeks, literally practical next steps going forward, what is the priority for a young artist today to keep in mind, in your view?
Well, the most important thing to me is to tell the story, or thinking that the composers had a fantastic imagination. They wrote down these things black and white on paper. And we have to decipher this coded language and recreate the hologram for the audience to witness in that moment, so that they get a full 3D immersion in that musical world. And this is our mission, I believe. On every concert, there's no small or big concert. Every concert is worth it. It's about recreating this fantasy, this imagination, as a lived moment, as a lived experience in the concert, from the text that we've been studying and we've been learning together with the other musicians on stage, and just to make sure that what we're doing is not just delivering a performance, but is recreating a lived moment.
Emmanuel Pahoud, thank you so much for joining us for Classique 15.
Thank you so much, Jack.
And thanks to you for joining me, Jack Pepper, for Classique 15. This episode and all in the series are available on the usual podcast platforms and online at classique.com. On there, you'll also be able to find all of Classique's latest news and opportunities, their online concert series and video on demand. And whilst you are online, do have a look at Classique's social media for the very latest. That's at Classique Music. Thanks for your company today, and until we speak again, enjoy the music.